Hello, welcome to another edition of Is This Thing On? I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. Joining me today on the podcast is someone that I wanted to get on the podcast for a while, someone really important to the community media industry, especially in Massachusetts. And it's Melinda Garfield. She's the executive director of Westwood Media Center and the president of Mass Access. Thanks for doing this, Melinda.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to jump into a few different things. First off, what is Mass Access for those that don't know what it is?
Well, Mass Access is a 501c6 organization, and we actually represent and think about the needs and the interests of all community media centers in Massachusetts, whether we're fighting some state legislation or we're creating opportunities for collaboration. We want to help our members the best we can in just helping them with resources and making sure that, you know, they feel as though they have someone to talk to. Massachusetts is so interesting in the fact that almost every city and town has its own community media center. And sometimes, you could feel like you're on your own island. So, for me, Mass Access is just great in terms of I can just, utilize the forum where we can just ask questions to each other. And you don't always feel like you have to reinvent the wheel because there's certainly other people who are in your shoes. And it's just a great resource.
An idea how many media centers there are in Massachusetts and how many are Mass Access members, just a ballpark?
I think there's about 200 media centers, and we had, at least in 2018, we're just doing the renewals now, but in the end of 2018, I believe we were at about 150, which is great.
Wow, that's awesome. So what are some things that Mass Access does for its membership? What are like some of the membership benefits, if you're going to a member saying like, hey, here's what we do?
Sure. So the first thing that we do is events. So coming up on January 29th, I believe, 29th, is our second annual Mass Creator Awards / annual meeting. So it's the kickoff of the new year, and we invite all of our members to come to Boston. This year we're at Icon Nightclub, where we're doing, we're honoring some legislators of the year, state and national. And then we are also giving out awards to the people who have applied. And then part of it is also our annual meeting where we're just going to give a quick update about, our plans for the future. And then the next event is going to be our spring conference. The date and place is TBD, but we'll announce that pretty soon. And that's just a wonderful day event that we've been doing for at least as long as I've been a member. And it's like the main place where all our members can come, take seminars. We really, really try to get, industry professionals and even just outside professionals talking about different things that, executive directors or production people, deal with on a daily basis that you either need more information about or you have tons of questions. And this is just a perfect place to come and collaborate with your colleagues and learn from different people. A lot of these centers are pretty small. So a lot of us don't have like an HR department and, we don't have big budgets for, training for staff and whatnot. And so I think our spring conference, we try to really utilize what we can to get as many professionals in for seminars like that. And then finally, our event in the fall is the fall meet and greet series. The last 2 years we've done the topic being alternative revenue, which I'm sure we'll get into in a second. But as the listeners may or may not know, our funding has always, for the last few years, has always been at threat from cord cutters. And when I say cord cutters, that just means the people who are no longer using or paying for cable television service. They're just getting internet service or phone or usually just internet. With that, our individual budgets are starting to decline because we are only paid through cable TV franchise fees. So our meet and greet session was all about for the last 2 years, how do you fundraise? What are you doing that's successful? And we made it sort of like a round table. Last year we had like a CPA and a lawyer, and we just want to make sure that everybody has, again, the resources that you need in our small industry, just because we can't all afford to individually, you know, get these answers all the time. And it's just also a great way to interface with our members. And for us too, you know, as Mass Access, we need to be able to afford to do all of these things for our members. So, and we keep our membership fees relatively low in comparison to maybe some of the other organizations. And this is also a great way for our vendors to come and do demos of their equipment and give brief presentations about, you know, some of their wares, and it all just kind of works in everyone's favor because sponsorships are the key to success at this point. So, yeah. And then the other, you know, ongoing member benefits that you asked about in terms of Mass Access, you know, we have this awesome member forum now that you can go on, and there's just different categories, and you can ask a million questions, and people always are getting back to you on these things. So that's cool. And then we started a strategic plan as a board in the summertime, just wrapped it up in January. So we're coming out to our members with what that looks like. But I know that some of the low hanging fruit of that really, really dense document is like more member resources in terms of places where, like, a members portal only section where you can find documents. Again, not having to reinvent the wheel is key, and a key time saver for us when we're running these smaller stations on low to no budget. So being able to access documents that have already been created, or you know, ideas and marketing materials and all that good stuff, it's just right. A time saver and a benefit.
Right. How long have you been president?
Just kidding. I've been president. I think I've been president for a year and a half, but I've been on the board since 2012.
Gotcha. I was wondering how you got roped into Mass Access leadership.
I got roped in by my former boss, Bob Kelly. He, you know, it wasn't really roped. It was like, come on, join me on some of these conferences. He took me to one of the Jersey Access Group conferences, and as well as, I think we went to the National ACM conference at the time. I think it was like San Francisco. And it just kind of opened my eyes to what's going on in our industry. It's kind of insular here in Massachusetts. So once you once you get out of the state and you see what else is going on, it's like, holy crow. Everyone's so different, and you can really, if you choose, you could really get a lot of ideas and just expand your mind when you go other places. So I think with those kind of trips that he brought me on, and the people that we talked to, as he was the former president of Mass Access at the time, it was kind of natural for me to want to just continue to work on stuff.
I agree with you, and seeing what's out there, because like, I'll take my staff to even state conferences or regionals, and it's just really funny to see how they see things and saying what we can bring back, et cetera, and so on. And then one of my staff members, he's originally from Marshfield, but then he went to school out in Washington State, worked in Access out in Washington State, and then came back. And like, when he was out there, they were saying like, wow, Massachusetts is like the biggest community media hotbed in like the country, blah, blah, blah. It was just funny seeing different perceptions.
Yeah. And that's right now in our current landscape, that's a blessing and a curse.
it is. And it's funny. We joke about, some of my staff joke about the state going to conference and what ideas do we come back with, you know, because there's times I'm sure you've run to it where you hear two or three things that are great, and you bring it back and implementing them, it's like, oh my God, these are monstrous things that we're trying to accomplish. Mass Access, and just as a disclaimer, I'm on the board of Mass Access. I'm a newer board member, just for the disclaimer purposes. But before, you guys have been involved in not just state, but federal stuff too. Why is it so important to advocate not just on the state side, but the federal side?
So I think, you know, we have only, and to my knowledge, we have only really asserted ourselves in a few different federal fights. The most recent one would be this FCC proposed rulemaking. And in particular, this one, I can only speak to, you know, the ones that I've been involved in. The other one, I'd just be speculating or repeating rumors. So I'm just going to go on what I know, is that, you know, we chose to file initial and reply comments as Mass Access because we felt as though times are so uncertain right now. We had to be a part of this fight. And we knew that if we didn't file initial and reply, that we would not get a seat at the table when the appeals process started. So we just wanted to make sure that we were able to safeguard our membership. And because, again, as we keep repeating, Massachusetts is so different than any other state, we wanted to make sure that if there was, you know, this proposed rulemaking could be pretty detrimental depending upon what the definition of in-kind services ends up being. So we just wanted to make sure that we had a seat at the table to declare what our preferred definition would be. And really, that's what it came down to.
Okay. The two biggest things that we've discussed, and something that you've probably been educating your members and your board on, is the FCC stuff on the federal side and the DOR stuff on the local side. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of give a basic, you know, summary of what those are and how they impact community media? Because I don't think people really understand how they impact community media.
So we'll start with the FCC. The FCC in September came out with this proposed rule that would allow cable providers to deduct what they deem as in-kind services from their franchise fees. And for those of you who don't know how community media is funded, very, very briefly, the Cable Act of 84, revamped in 96, I believe, stipulates that cable TV providers who put their cable wires over municipal public rights of way should pay up to 5% of their gross annual revenues for PEG TV or cable, you know, what right. we do, community media. So therefore, they're saying now that, you know, they can say that, and again, this is all hypothetical, but they could say, you know, we as cable providers, we give the town, you know, free cable drops in all municipal buildings and schools. And that, you know, amounts to $30,000 a year. So we're just going to take that right off the top of what we give you. And for some of us who have really small budgets, that could really, you know, you could lose a person basically.
Right.
From that. And I'm just giving you the lowest hanging fruit. The one that's the real concern is the channel transmission. So right. we're all a little bit concerned that it could be, they could say, well, it costs me, you know, $200,000 to transmit my signal from your town hall to my head end. And I'm taking that off the top. And essentially, that would just basically wipe most of us out. So that's the FCC problem. And right now we stand, where it stands is, you know, it's a little bit of a blessing that the government shut down because the FCC is now on hiatus. But right. We were supposed to hear their final rulemaking decision, I guess, either late January, early February. I assume it will be pushed out a little bit longer. Should this rule be enacted as is, it sounds like we have, you know, 90 days or 60 days since once it hits the Federal Register. And then, you know, if you talk to lawyers, some of them say current contracts in place can't be, you know, it won't affect current contracts.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that one of the cable providers can then serve the community with an amendment to that contract saying, right. okay, because of the FCC, we're now deducting X, Y, and Z. And we, I think at that point, as Massachusetts municipalities, will need to band together because they're going to all need to push back and go, well, no, we don't want to play this game. You can't amend my current contract. And so it'll be an interesting course of events in the next year. But so that's the FCC issue. Right. The DOR issue, it's a sad one for me, honestly. We fought all last session, which is a 2-year session up at Beacon Hill, to get literally one word changed. In 2014, legislation was passed that basically was protecting the money. It was all for all the right reasons. It basically stipulates that any franchise fees coming in must hit an enterprise fund in order to protect PEG funding, and it could only be used for cable-related purposes. So that sounds really actually great. But unfortunately, once the law was, the guidelines were made by the Department of Revenue, it ended up that because of the language, it needs to go to town meeting for appropriation. And for those of us who know, the payments come in quarterly and you can't appropriate money that's not there. So there's a huge disconnect. So when we talked to the Department of Revenue, they said, all you have to do is change that one word from appropriate to, expend. So just change appropriate to expend, and our definition or our guidelines will then turn into more of a revolving fund. So it would, again, just have to hit the fund in and then immediately right. can come out, which I think is everybody was okay with. And then it didn't pass. we got up to the final hour of the session. It made it through the Senate, and unfortunately the House didn't have enough time to do its research. And now we're stuck with the current guidelines of 2016, which stipulate there's two ways to account for it. One is an enterprise fund that requires appropriation, and two is a special revenue account that would require receipts. Neither of those work for us.
Right. It's such a bizarre thing, because originally when we first started it in Marshfield, the checks would come to the town, then they would cut us a check. And then it got to the point the town said, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. We'll just have the checks come directly to you. And so now, it's like, okay, what do we do now? Or how's right. this going to work? It's such a bizarre thing.
I know. And of course, as the Mass Access Board, which we can't exactly, every municipality is different and we can't tell you what to do. But some municipalities aren't interested in rocking the boat, and they're just kind of going to wait around to see if the DOR is going to police this rule. Or some have already set up the fund in before we were even, before our legislation had died. Some municipalities already set up this fund, and they did it the way that they wanted to. And again, if it doesn't comply with the current the current guidelines, is the DOR really going to come around and police it? And I think that's going to be what we're all going to witness this next year.
Right. A question I get probably, and you probably get maybe once or every few months, is someone that calls up and says, what's this PEG fee on my cable bill?
Right.
What is it?
I wish that it wasn't called that, because it sounds so ominous, right? Mm-hmm. I think, from just black and white, what it is it's a fee that the cable company has passed on to the consumer to fund PEG. Mm-hmm. And so they're basically, the cable companies aren't paying for anything. It's a pass-through. And that was allowed, I believe, when they did the rewrite in 96. Originally, it was not a pass-through. Originally, it was actually the give-back, the way that it was supposed to be, where if you hung your cables, you give back to the community. Now they're not giving back anything. And in fact, their opposition to the FCC, their agreement with the FCC rule was that, this is hindering them from making money, when that's not just blatantly not true. It's all public knowledge, and you can see what each cable company has reported to the state, and that's all public knowledge. So Absolutely. You can see that they've made money.
Right. So let's get into maybe a happier subject.
Please.
I know, please. How about your background? How'd you get in community media? You from Massachusetts originally, or
no? So
what's your story?
My story. So I'm from Connecticut. I went to University of Rhode Island, graduated in 2004. I was a communications major. URI didn't at that time. I guess now they have a superb film and television studio. They had nothing back then. So, and I remember my first job interview at ESPN, they were like, why didn't you go to Syracuse? Or why didn't you go? I'm like, because I didn't have a good enough grades and good enough SATs. Okay, that's why. Like, but I believe as I'm proof, you could really do anything you want. It doesn't matter where you go. As long as you're a hard worker and you're smart and you know and you have drive, you could really do anything. So with that, after I graduated, I started working for NBC Connecticut. I realized I didn't really want to be in news pretty quickly. Moved up to Massachusetts, started teaching digital media in Revere. Great experience. Again, realized after 2 years, I did not want to be a teacher for the rest of my life.
I'll second that.
Awesome job. Awesome kids. Just not my thing. I felt as though I hadn't accomplished enough yet. And at which point I moved to New York City and I worked for a film finance company. We brought a couple movies to Sundance and that was an unbelievably amazing experience. Very eye-opening on how this all works. And then after that, I worked freelance for MTVU, which was cool. My dream job. I always wanted to work for MTV. And that was like back when MTV actually did programming.
When they played music videos?
Yeah. It was pretty cool. And that unfortunately was just freelance and project base. And then I decided that I didn't want to fight the good fight anymore in New York City. It was a bit expensive. Came back to Massachusetts, still expensive. Right. And I started working for Powderhouse Productions, which at the time was working on a couple shows for Animal Planet, like Cats 101 and Dogs 101. And we did a pilot for the Travel Channel, again, freelance. And then there's a kind of a tight-knit group of producers, directors, line producers, camera people, audio people who all get the jobs here. And I was starting to make friends with those people. And I worked on another project with them for PBS. And I loved every second of it. The thing that I don't love about freelance is you don't know where your money's coming from.
Absolutely.
Which gets me to, how did I get into community media? Well, I wanted a full-time job. And there's really not a ton of full-time jobs in our industry. So this was it. And so I started working in Watertown. I worked there for like 4 months and then I got my job at New TV. And from that, I started as the education channel coordinator, made my own kind of proposed my own department as production services. And from there, I got the job here and I've been here for 3 years. That's my story.
So why did I see? I come from a news background. So what made you hate news? Because I loved it.
I think it was the glorifying the sadness. That kind of like every story is a fire. Someone got hurt.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, and right. If it bleeds, it leads. And then I was really interested. I was doing more production assisting on in the studio, and I was really interested in getting out in the field a little bit more. So I started doing videography and some reporting, and I wanted to learn like the truck and the satellite stuff. And I thought all that was cool, but I also felt really badly about busting in and trying to get an interview with people who are crying. You know, I don't know.
That's the tough part of it. Did you have any PEG experience before you started working in the industry?
No.
Nope. Did you have any idea what community media was?
I did. So there was, I without even doing much for them, when I was in high school, I won the Cox Communications Scholarship from my local PEG in Manchester, Connecticut. And I really had no idea what it was all about. But honestly, once I started, you know, once I learned who we are, what we do, it just all made sense. The mission is just so, it's kind of what keeps me going, you know, being able to provide transparency in government at such a crucial time, giving interns hands-on experience where you really can't get that anywhere. And, you know, right. We were all interns once and we were all getting coffee. You know, that just that in itself to me is amazing. And then, of course, not to mention the, you know, free speech, First Amendment right, and access to the airwaves is very important.
Right. So you're at Westwood. Yes. What goes on at Westwood? Because every community media center is different. That's one thing I try to explain to people.
Oh my God, it's so different. And I was just talking to my mom about this. So, you know, Westwood's so interesting. When I got here 3 years ago, we didn't have a studio. So I built a studio, hired an additional staff member. And right now we are heavy programming on G and E, which is government and education. Mm-hmm. The P, it's funny. This community isn't really that community. Like I think about Newton or I think about Somerville and those, you know, there's people knocking down the doors, creating stuff. We maybe get one person a month. And most of them are my board members who are creating things. Mm-hmm. People in this community don't really want to do it themselves, but they'll pay you for it. And if that's the model, I'm okay with that. You know, if we have enough resources to do that, then that's who we are. And that's okay.
So you guys are, so it's basically you guys creating the P channel or going through Mass Media Exchange for P content.
And we love to curate out of the Mass Media Exchange, you know, publicizing other people's work. We love that. But yeah, most of the P is non-existent in here.
Yeah. It's funny because I try to explain that to my board here in Marshfield in that, because we're so P heavy that we inherited a lot of producers when we took over, when this became a nonprofit back in 08. And we've had a lot of people since then. And I'm saying like, guys, we're like a freak of nature in the sense that we have a lot of public content for that are produced by members in the community for a town of 25,000 people.
Yeah.
It's like they have to understand that.
Yeah.
So what's it like going from New TV, which is like a mecca, mm-hmm. huge place to Westwood, which I know is a bit smaller.
Yeah. So I went from like a town or a city of 80,000 to a town of 16,000. Obviously, there's a lot of differences, including the budget and the amount of employees that are here. So, you know, it was a big transition, but it made me learn a lot of new things. Like, you know, for instance, there's a marketing department at New TV that has two people in it. And how nice would that be, right? To have a marketing person and a social media person. Whew, I wish I had that. But you have to learn how to do it yourself, and how to, you know, not overburden your staff, but make it a part of their job too. And just be realistic. I just had to be very realistic. What are the things that I really can accomplish with, you know, three of us, and what are the things that I can't scale? One of the things that I definitely brought here, as we spoke earlier, is the alternative revenue idea. You know, we immediately started doing production services. And I think, as the year goes on, we will try and grow that a little bit more, you know, make a new, like a side website for that stuff. We just created our production services reel. And, you know, for the last 3 years, I was able to bring in about $25,000 in production services, which is pretty good. But obviously that's just, that's the gross, not the net.
So you're a full-time staff of three?
You're a full-time staff of three.
Wow. Pretty good. So talk about production services. This is something new in the community media industry, and it's something that we've started to do here in Marshfield a little bit and just trying to get buy-in from our board and whatnot about what it is and how this is important. So talk about, and you're someone that's been really successful in doing it, you know, so give us the lowdown on production services and why it's so important.
Well, I think you know, it might not be the actual act of production services, but obviously alternative funding is so important.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So our, you know, for production services, to me, we do, you know, outside paid video work, and we do facility rental. And it's, because I had to have created this department before coming here, I kind of knew what I was supposed to do to get the word out. It's a lot of marketing. It's a lot of, in the beginning, doing things for free. I kind of always, in my life, like when I got the job at Powder House, when, you know, I was fresh out of New York City, came back to Boston, went over to Powder House, walked in, and I was like, I'll work for you for free. And I think they were like, okay, great. And I was literally put on a paid project within 2 weeks. And I think people forget that you do have to do some free stuff. You got to humble yourself, and you got to build your reputation. People need to see what you could do and like you. I'm not saying give it all away, because that's stupid, but you certainly have to start with free or very discounted. You know, we just finished up a huge pro bono project that we did for the Neponset Valley Chamber. Granted, they're honoring us this year with like a volunteer award, which is awesome. But we did like a 7-part series for how to deal with aging family members. Mm-hmm. And it's sponsored by really big companies, you know, Partners Healthcare, Brigham and Women's, HESCO, elder care lawyers and attorneys. And, you know, they're going to be able to use all of this stuff. And one, we did it because it was a wonderful project, but we did it also because I need the Neponset Valley Chamber members to know who we are. And I want them to see the quality of work that we do. And I assume within the coming year, this will yield something. So I always say that you should definitely need to do some stuff for free first. And that just goes without saying. But the studio thing, I think that's kind of like an untapped resource. Everybody really is looking for a studio, but nobody really thinks about community media in terms of renting a studio. Right. So I have made it a point to make sure that I'm still meeting with independent producers, because those people get the jobs and they need a studio. So I make sure that like they know that we rent our studio. There's a couple of community media centers that do rent their studio, and everybody has a different setup. And I think people need to know that too. You know, when you come here, you're going to get quiet, because as I said, we don't have members. You're going to get quiet. You're going to get access to the entire space. And, you know, that just like an intimate setting, you're not going to have to worry about noise or having to get in and out of the studio quickly because another show is behind you. And if you want that type of, you know, setting, then you should come here. If you need something down and dirty that's only going to take you an hour, then go to one of those places that has time slots for you, you know, that has a lot of hustle and bustle.
Right.
And so I think you gotta kind of define who you are and before you go out and you start selling things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how the heck do you balance all this stuff that you do? I mean, I know you're a mom, you run a media center, you're the president of Mass Access. How the heck do you juggle all this stuff?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out. I'm somehow making it work. My kid's 14 months old, so I'm not sleeping yet. So that makes it equally as hard. I think just making sure that you know, you plan out every hour of the day. Because if you spend too much time on one thing, then you didn't get to a couple of other things. And actually right now, you know, Westwood Media Center just went in front of the Board of Selectmen, or the new select board, I'm sorry. And, you know, we presented that there's this impending threat to our funding, which most of them knew about because we had you know, most of them are aware of the situation. There has been at least enough press about what's been happening. And we said, you know, listen, we hope that you value our service enough, because someday soon, we don't know what the effects of this are going to be. We might need to call upon you for funding. And if you value our service, we hope that you will help us. And it seemed as though all three selectmen were very open to the idea, and that they didn't want to see any sort of lapse in service. So we'll see what that all means. But I think as we move through this uncertain landscape, I think everybody should be thinking about how to survive. And it's not just alternative revenue, because I'll tell you right now, there's no way I'm going to be able to raise, you know, $150,000 if I'm not getting fully funded. So I think the best bet is to, you know, try and get as much municipal funding as you can.
I was going to say, that kind of leads me into the next question of literally break out your crystal ball and where's community media a couple of years from now? What's it going to look like?
I think at least I'm talking like 5 years, you know, we're kind of on the cusp of a big change.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of people who don't believe the sky is going to fall and our funding is going to immediately disappear this year. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not a huge, you know, I'm not a pessimist or anything, but I like to plan for the worst. So let's say that it is still a slow, dramatic decline, even with like cord cutting or reclassification of cable into internet. You know, Verizon's has said we're no longer cable, we're Fios. So, you know, I think that there will be some sort of decline quickly. And within that 5 years. So I think that we are going to see, I'm sorry about that. We're going to see regionalizations. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of the small centers will band together, and it'll probably be a lot of government work as opposed to, you know, the public side. Maybe there'll be like one regional center where the public can come in and do their thing. I think we're going to see the cable channels themselves go away. It will be more of an internet channel base, which will be detrimental to the seniors. So I think we're going to have to, as community media specialists, we're going to have to figure out how do we get to the seniors and give them access if they don't have internet or a computer. And how do they, you know, teach them how to access our information.
Right.
And then I see a lot of nonprofits turning into government departments.
I would agree on a lot of that. I would definitely agree on a lot of that.
What do you see? Since, you know, we're equals. What do you see?
I see it very similar. I see it's going to be a bigger focus on the E and the G side. Mm-hmm. And potentially down the road, you know, being a regional center or being part of a town entity. Because, you know, in our case, we're not going to be able to raise the, you know, $450,000 it takes to, you know, do what we do here in Marshfield. So it's going to have to, it's going to have to be, you know, E&G focus. Right. And that's why it's important to have those relationships with your town government and your community stakeholders, you know, that you're an essential part of what they do.
I think when you talk to, I've already outed myself. I've been in the industry for about 8 years, which is not that long in terms of the industry being, you know, 35 plus years old,
right.
Not more. And there's most of the people who started in this industry are still in it. So, and you talk to those people and they have a totally different perspective. You know,
absolutely.
They're very worried about the P, and, you know, we were founded on free speech, and how can you not like continue to provide that outlet? And the way that I see it is, as long as they have the community has the access to the resources, you know, with the digital age and YouTube, and they're in your own personal distribution via social media and whatnot. All they need is the access to the equipment. They don't need our channel, in my opinion, anymore.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things for us is how do we tap into all these little subcultures of like gaming and VR and stuff like that. That's one of the things that we've been really focusing on in 2019 is how do we tap into those groups? Because the 15-year-old kid doesn't want to come in and produce a half-hour TV show every week.
No,
you know, they want to do gaming. They want to do VR. So it's like, how do we get and tap into those cultures?
Right. And I think, you know, how do you... I think if you have the space to just being able to offer coding or offer something other than our basic staple courses, like just editing and filming and whatnot, you know, that will definitely keep us relevant as we move forward.
Yeah. Like we're doing like next month, we're doing a Super Smash Brothers tournament with in collaboration with the local Boys and Girls Club. So it's a win-win for both groups.
Yeah. No, that's really awesome. I remember even, as I said, I was a teacher in Revere, and this was back in 2007 and into the 2008 school year. And at that time, we did Guitar Hero after school, you know, like a tournament. And at that time, that was a big deal, you know, that we were doing that. But I think we do really need to think about and surround ourselves as, you know, executive directors who are making these decisions about programming and appealing to our audience. We need to surround ourselves with people who are gamers, who are coders, who are, you know, working in alternative forms of media. And maybe even if, you know, I don't want to become the guru of it, I need to hire someone who does, you know.
Right. And it's also one of the things too with us, podcasting has become a huge thing here at the station. And it's great because there's a lot of groups that don't want to come in and produce a TV show.
But
it's a way for them to do something to get their information out. And then some of them down the road are like, hey, I'm doing this podcast, but I could also do a program, you know, once a quarter. And it's like, yeah, you could.
Yeah.
And they're really, it's almost like a gateway.
Another thing that I've heard recently, like, especially for those people who have been in this industry for a long time, they need to think about, you know, revamping their rules and procedures, because some of these stations still have that old rules and procedures saying, like, if you're a community producer, you have to produce a 30-minute program. And to me, that just is ridiculous. Like, nobody watches a 30-minute program unless it's a Netflix program, right? Or if it's like produced by someone really, really incredible with an amazing cast. Like, nobody's watching a 30-minute program anymore, especially a talk show, because that's really boring. But why wouldn't you be producing small, digestible clips, especially ones that can be shared on social media? And it just makes no sense that that would be a stipulation still in this day and age.
And also the idea of staff being more hands-on with members. It's something that we've kind of shifted. You know, when we first started, we had that very old school mentality of, you know, members do all the work. And now it's like more collaboration. Our job is to be right beside you and do the hand-holding. We're not going to do all the work, but we're going to make sure you don't get stuck and billy what we have to.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, in our situation, it's like, we basically do all the work, but we always encourage that you either find someone to help us or, you know, most of the time it's fine. Listen, if it's a studio shoot, like, it's not that hard anymore. We have these amazing switchers and you come out with an almost finished product, just slap some titles on it, you know, but, yeah, you know, I would encourage others, if it is a labor intensive field shoot, to just think about how much work goes into that.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Exactly. But well, thanks so much for doing this. This was awesome. I mean, I think the people that listen to this will really enjoy listening to this. It's funny. I went from the last episode featured the regional director of public relations for a cable company. Ooh. Now we're going to the other side of community media. So it was really, really interesting spectrum of guests. So thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.